Okay, so I'm going to discuss some recent and ongoing work with Ofer Aharoni and Micha Berkouz that we just put out recently. Unfortunately, we couldn't convince either of them to come back for the conference, although this work did start at our workshop here. And so I'm going to be discussing that with a little bit of overlap or reference to work I did earlier with my student Alan Adams. In the ADS-CFT correspondence, we have the very well-known relations worked out by these folks between the gauge theory and gravity sides. And in particular, if we consider a fixed system, so we've specified the couplings that describe the Lagrangian of the gauge theory, and fix correspondingly the asymptotic values of the non-normalizable modes of the fields on the gravity side, then excitations about that background, which are created by single trace operators on the gauge theory side, correspond at leading order to single particle quanta of the corresponding gravity field phi. Similarly, double trace operators excitations about that fixed gauge theory background translate over to the gravity side into two particle excitations, and similarly for higher multi-trace operators. Alternatively, one can consider a procedure where we change the system, change the Hamiltonian or Lagrangian of the system, which on the field theory side is described by adding an operator coupled to, multiplied by a corresponding coupling constant H. And if we do that with a single trace operator, then that maps to deformations of the gravity background, where the non-normalizable values of the gravity fields at infinity deform by an amount proportional to the coupling, the field theory coupling H. So in particular, in very simple examples that were studied early on, such as simple orbifolds of the sphere, one found precise agreement between the number of exactly marginal directions in the CFT and the moduli of the gravity side background that preserve the ADS using on the field theory side techniques developed by Lee and Strassler. So you might have noticed that there was one entry in that dictionary which was missing, namely the answer to the question, what happens if we deform the gauge theory side Lagrangian by a double trace, or in general higher multi-trace operator? So we consider a delta L, which is proportional to some coupling H tilde, with a power of 1 over n squared, guaranteeing a good large n limit, as I'll explain in detail later, multiplied by a product of two single trace operators, O1 and O2. So I'll discuss two classes of cases where such a thing arises. In one particular case, which is our main case of interest, it's an exactly marginal deformation that preserves supersymmetry and involves a double trace operator deformation of the Lagrangian on the field theory side. So that in this case that I'll discuss, the number of exactly marginal directions on the CFT side is greater than the number of moduli that preserve the ADS on the gravity side. So that'll make this question very urgent. And in general, the question is quite confusing because of the fact that, as I said, in general, the VEVs of supergravity fields are already accounted for precisely by the number of single trace operators in the gauge theory. So let's begin by considering what the sort of Tuftian field theory analysis would suggest for what the dual string theory might look like. And I'll begin by thinking through that diagrammatically and then work out the n-scaling for you also sort of algebraically. As you know, a single trace coupling looks like a planar vertex. So if we think about scalar fields big X on the gauge theory side, a single trace X squared operator is depicted by a strip with indices I and j, as I indicated there. And if we normalize the Lagrangian to have an overall power of 1 over g angle squared in front of it, which translates into a power n over the Itauch coupling out front, then if we normalize the operators, the single trace operators such as trace x squared with an extra power of n, and similarly single trace operators like trace x to the fourth also with an extra power of n, then these vertices fill out in a large n limit to form part of a genus zero string diagram which scales like n squared, corresponding to 1 over g string squared of the dual string theory. So in particular, of course, these diagrams, these vertices are planar and they correspond to the usual genus zero contribution, or they can contribute, therefore, to the leading genus zero contribution on the gravity side. On the other hand, double trace couplings are not planar. They involve, in the simplest case, just a double trace perturbation, a pair of strips which are glued together in the way I've drawn there. And in this case, if we scale the operator with no factor of n squared in front of it, which I'll show emerges dynamically in one of the two classes of examples that I'll show you, then although this diagram is not planar, it can still contribute to the leading n, order n squared, correlation functions, because it can connect otherwise disconnected diagrams, such as this pair of spheres I've drawn here, which with the scaling of the operator, which is inserted at the joining point here, scales also like n squared. Now, another thing that I want to note from this field theory point of view is the fact that this being a composite operator inserted at a particular single point on the in the four dimensions on which the gauge theory lives, this double trace vertex looks like a delta function in the four dimensions, a contact interaction in the four dimensions of the field theory. So we should expect it to be proportional to a delta function, at least in the four dimensions of the field theory. When we first started investigating this question, we thought it might be a contact interaction in the bulk of the ADS spacetime, but that is no longer what we get. But this much in the four dimensions is indicated by the diagrammatics, as I just explained. So I don't know if those pictures were completely clear, so let me go over algebraically the n-scaling. So for example, if I consider a single trace operator like trace x squared, then with this normalization factor of n in front, and the n in front of the whole Lagrangian, which means the propagator scale like 1 over n, then we find that, for example, this two-point correlation function of operators n trace squared times n trace squared scales like n squared, because we have two index loops coming from the contractions, two propagators, which give 1 over n factors, and the normalization factors give us the right power of n squared. And you can check that higher point correlation functions also scale this way. So this is the usual story. Now, when we consider changing Lagrangian by this double trace piece proportional to h tilde with no extra powers of n, then and look at how this deformation of the Lagrangian changes a correlation function, such as this two-point function of operators n trace squared, then the deformation will be given by bringing down powers of this change to the Lagrangian into that correlation function. And because this is a composite operator consisting of two powers of trace x squared, there's a contribution which scales like n squared again, because this composite operator can connect diagrams that otherwise would be disconnected. In other words, if this were not a composite operator, these two sets of contractions would not be connected to each other, and we would just have a disconnected diagram scaling like something down by a power of n squared from from a product of two spheres, but with this scaling of n, we do get the right scaling for a genus zero type contribution because of this fact that we can connect otherwise disconnected diagrams.
So you're saying the proper scaling for each tilde is that it scales like one between this
one? Yes, and in fact, that will, I'll show how that comes out in the case where this perturbation is generated dynamically, and then in the case where it's a exactly marginal perturbation, we just scale it that way to have a good large n limit. So given that, then perturbatively in this deformation coupling H tilde, we can simply read off the answer to our question by doing conformal perturbation theory about the original background, which is to say we can write our deformed correlation function in terms of correlation functions in the original theory by bringing down powers of this perturbation. So now notice I've defined the O's to include the correct normalization factor N, which means that my deformation now has an H tilde over N squared, which is exactly the same scaling I was using before. So if we look at the deformation of some correlation function of J operators O1 through OJ, then there's the original piece plus the piece that we obtained by bringing down this power of the double trace perturbation from the Lagrangian. And that gives us this, in the leading large N limit, this factorized contribution, which is an integral over X of the insertion point of the double trace operator, ON1 times ON2, of the product of a sum of partitions of products of correlation functions involving some subset of the original operators with ON1 and the rest with ON2, summed over all such partitions. And because we're just doing essentially conformal perturbation theory about the original background, this deformed contribution involves, as I said, only correlation functions evaluated in the original theory. So that means we can use the original ADS-CFT dictionary to read off in this perturbative regime the gravity side, or a gravity side description of the double trace deformation. And that's what we'll do, which is just, of course, a modest first step, but one that I think is completely well defined. Before I do that, let me first show you that there are cases where this arises. So in particular, I'm going to show you two classes of examples, one that I'll start with in which these operators are relevant, and another which is an easier to control case where it's a marginal perturbation. And the point of that is so that using the UVIR correspondence, we expect these deformations to affect physics in the bulk of ADS. If we just deformed by an irrelevant operator, of course, it wouldn't have any effect in the bulk of ADS. So it's important for this issue to come up at all that there be such deformations that are either marginal or relevant. So the first case I want to discuss involves double trace couplings which run, and this kind of effect was first observed by Seitlin and Zaremba in a type 0 case and generalized to all orbifolds of ADS by Adams and myself. So the situation is to consider orbifolds of ADS 5 times S5 that preserve the ADS component. And in particular, a generic non-freely acting but supersymmetry breaking orbifold leads to a twisted sector tachyon on the gravity side. And using the original ADS-CFT duality, we can map that to the gauge theory that results from D-brains at an orbifold point, as worked out by Douglas and Moore. So there's a particular quiver gauge theory that this corresponds to. And the fact that the orbifold is non-freely acting on the sphere turns out to correspond to the fact that there is a branch of the D-brain moduli space in which the D-brains can approach the orbifold singularity and split into fractional brains. Along this branch, which only exists in the cases which are tachyonic on the gravity side, one finds a Coleman-Weinberg instability developing in the gauge theory. And it's that Coleman-Weinberg potential which will have a double trace perturbation of Lagrangian implicit in it. So let me spell that out a little bit better. In these theories that I was just discussing, at large n, radiative corrections to scalar masses, like just the trace x squared kind of operator that I was discussing before, cancel because of the large n inheritance of the orbifold amplitudes studied by Bershadsky, Kakashadze, and Vafa, and because of the quantum symmetry. Those two symmetries are enough to guarantee this. But double trace quartic interactions are generated in general. So let me just do a specific example. You can do it in full generality easily enough. Consider N D3 brains at a C mons D3 singularity that has a twisted sector tachyon at the origin. And the quiver gauge theory that arises from that is an SUN cubed theory with bifundamental scalars and fermions in these representations I've drawn, as well as adjoint scalars describing the motion of the D brains along the orbifold planes. There are three of them corresponding to the three SUN gauge groups, so I've labeled them by X1 through 3. There's a vector index for the Lorentz direction along the orbifold fixed plane. We can parameterize the motion on this fractional D brain branch of the moduli space by eigenvalues of these x's. So for each x, like x sub 1, there are n eigenvalues labeled by an index a. With that notation, one finds the Coleman-Weinberg potential of this form. And it leads to an instability that correlates very nicely with the presence of a tachyon on the gravity side. The point of my bringing it up in this talk, however, is the fact that this contribution will, in general, have many multi-trace contributions when written in terms of the gauge invariant operators in the theory. And the simplest contribution of that sort is, in fact, the quartic scalar coupling, which has a contribution of this form in terms of those matrices X1 through 3 that I introduced before. It's a one-loop effect, so indeed it's proportional to some coupling H tilde, but has no factor of 1 over n, no factors of n. And this choice of coupling H tilde corresponds to a choice of counterterm in the theory, which you can think of in the usual way as a choice of renormalization group trajectory or a choice of field theory. So it's variable. Its value at a given scale is variable. But it is a running coupling, and the RG equation in this limit looks like this, with the Yang-Mills coupling not running in this large N limit, and the H tilde coupling running in this manner, which means that it just runs from large negative values to large positive values, going through a weak coupling region at some intermediate scale. In particular, therefore, it grows in the infrared and provides an example of a relevant contribution that on the field theory side is a double trace perturbation of the Lagrangian, which, as I say, grows in the infrared and therefore should affect gravity side processes deep in the bulk of ADS. So, as I say, the main case that we considered, however, is a case where a somewhat more special but more controlled case where the deformation, where there's a double trace deformation, which is exactly marginal and preserves some supersymmetry. And this is a direction that comes out of the study of ND3 brains at the conifold, something which had been studied earlier by Klebanov and Witten, Morrison and Plesser and company. So as explained by them, the theory of ND3 brains of the conifold arises as the following gauge theory. It has a gauge group SUN times SUN with chiral superfields A, I, and B, J, I, and J running from 1 to 2, transforming in the NN bar and N bar N respectively. And under the global symmetry, there's an SU2 times SU2 times U1R global symmetry, which acts on the A as a 2, 1 with charge 1/2, and the B is acted on by the second SU2 in the way I've shown. Starting from this theory, one can again use this Lee-Strassler analysis to determine the exactly marginal directions in the field theory. So let's do that. This SU2 squared global symmetry relates A1 with A2 and B1 with B2 so that the anomalous dimensions of those operators are satisfy these relations. And if you work out the beta function for the Yang-Mills coupling for the two SUNs, you find that it's the same for each SUN. It implies that gamma A plus gamma B is minus a half. Because there's only one independent beta function as a function of two couplings, G1 and G2, there's only one condition on two couplings to find a marginal direction. There is at least one exactly marginal direction. However, this is not the end of the story. That gauge theory, in order to describe brains at the conifold properly, in the case of multiple brains with n bigger than one, one needed, as was explained by Klebanoff and Witten, an interesting superpotential deformation, which I've written here. So this deformation, as you can see, because it's anti-symmetrized in the IJ indices, preserves the SU2 times SU2 times U1R symmetry, and it doesn't violate the conformal invariance. It's exactly scale invariant if the sum of the dimensions of the fields adds up to 3, including the anomalous dimensions. So that again gives us an equation gamma A plus gamma B is minus a half, which is the same condition as we got for the vanishing of the Yang-Mills beta functions. So now we have, again, just one condition for 3 couplings, suggesting at least 2 exactly marginal directions, complex directions. And this was taken as good news because, indeed, there are 2 complex moduli of string theory on this background. You get them from the 2B axion combined with the string coupling and from the integrated Ramon and NSB fields over the S2 component of the geometry. So that's a very satisfying correspondence between ordinary single trace deformations and ordinary moduli on the gravity side. But using exactly the same reasoning that was used to argue that the Klebanoff-Witten superpotential was exactly marginal, the following double trace contribution is also exactly marginal. So the only thing I've done here is introduce 2 traces instead of 1 trace into the superpotential deformation, preserving the anti-symmetrization and therefore the SU2 times SU2 times U1R symmetry. Again, it's the same calculation to work out the vanishing of the beta function for this superpotential coupling. And again, it's degenerate with all the others, so now we have one condition on 4 variables, which gives us 3 complex exactly marginal directions, which is greater than the number of moduli on the gravity side. So we seem to need some new type of string background of the sort that was suggested perhaps by the Tuft scaling of the diagrams to describe the dual of this exactly marginal double trace perturbation. So again, what I want to do is simply, for now, the modest step of reading off what happens perturbatively by plugging in the answer using this expression for the deformation of the correlation functions. So diagrammatically, what that says is that our correlation function will have a piece agreeing, you know, the original piece from the original undeformed theory, plus a sum over partitions of these correlation functions involving insertions of the double trace operator, which in this gravity side Feynman diagram type description looks like what I've drawn here. Now, in equations, what this says is that this deformation of the amplitude is accomplished by deforming the world G action of the string by a multi-local piece involving insertions of vertex operators that can, in general, appear on two different, otherwise disconnected components of the string world G. So in this first correction, we have two world sheets coordinatized by W1 and W2. We have a vertex operator insertion on each one describing the gravity side dual to each of the operators that went into the double trace perturbation. Where the vertex operators, as usual, solve the gravity side equations of motions, which is to say that the piece of the vertex operators that depend on the ADS5 coordinates x and z takes this form of a convolution of bulk boundary propagators from one diagram to the boundary and back out to the second diagram, as I've written here. It's probably important to note that these bulk boundary propagators don't, in general, describe ordinary particle propagation from the inside of the space to the outside. There's an infinite potential barrier to ordinary particle propagation to the boundary and back. What this bulk boundary propagator involves instead is an infinite rescaling of the gravity side fields to render them non-zero out at the boundary, which is related to the fact that this is really a deformation of the background, not an ordinary excitation in the original theory. So in the Lorentzian context, what that means is that these functions have pieces involving the non-normalizable modes of the field. Sort of similar wormhole-like deformations of perturbative string theory were considered by Fischler, Pavan, and Rosali in a different context of D-brain recoil. And we don't really understand if there's any connection between the two that is worth thinking more about. So this is basically the prescription. And at this perturbative level. So what it does, as I say, by construction, it reproduces the correct deformation of the correlation functions obtained by deforming the background in this manner. It preserves world sheet conformal invariance because the vertex operators, including that piece K that I introduced, satisfies the bulk space-time equations of motion. So in the supergravity approximation, we're solving the right equation to ensure conformal invariance of the vertex operators and of that world sheet theory. Also, I want to point out that since that convolution of bulk boundary propagators K has a limit toward the boundary that looks like z1 squared, z2 squared times a four-dimensional delta function, we are reproducing the expected contact interaction as we get toward the boundary, but only there. And as in ordinary deformations, which you can also describe by adding vertex operators to the string world sheet, we expect this deformation to affect the full bulk of the space-time. That's also, as I said, indicated by the field theory fact that these are marginal and or relevant perturbations. And finally, I already said this, that the Lorentzian case will involve non-normalizable modes of the gravity field. This is not simply an extra contribution to an ordinary diagram coming from ordinary normalizable particle propagation in the bulk of ADS. So we call these non-local string theories. Part of the reason for that is that this is because of this non-local description we were led to on the world sheet. But also in space-time, there are indications of non-locality in the physics. First of all, we're doing something like condensing two particles at once, which in general are in different spherical harmonics on the sphere, which leads to long-range correlations, or not a sphere in this case, but in Einstein space T11 or S5 mod gamma. Also, as I'll discuss in more detail in a second, this deformation lifts many directions in the gauge theory moduli space. And so if you think about D3 rain probes on this background, what you find is actually the moduli space for a single D rain unaffected by the deformation, but pairs of D rains experience long-range potentials between them, again, in these transverse dimensions. Also, maybe it's worth saying that there's been, in the context of exploring the ADS-CFT correspondence, there's been a lot of discussion of the problem of how to recover approximate locality in ADS, and perhaps, maybe in a sort of trivial way, this set of theories gives a way to help focus that discussion, since this is a case where you don't have full locality in the bulk. And here we see why that is. It has to do with the double trace deformation. But anyway, from the field theory point of view, it's just as good as any other type of marginal deformation. So pinpointing what corresponds to local physics on the gravity side and which kinds of field theories don't, may be aided by this new zoo of possibilities. Okay, so just let me explain a little bit more of that comment I made about the moduli space. Klebanov and Witten had introduced the superpotential in order to ensure that the eigenvalues of these matrices A and B describe motion on the correct space, on the conifold geometry, which can be written as Z1, Z2, or Z11, Z22 minus Z12, Z21 equals zero. And that's automatically solved by an identification of Zij with these eigenvalues of diagonalized A's, Ai's, and Bi's. After the deformation, we can ask what happens to those directions of the moduli space. And if you look at the F term for A, you get contributions of this form, which always involve pairs of eigenvalues. If we just turned on a single eigenvalue, there would be no change. So a single D-brain on the space moves around as always. But pairs of D-brains do feel strong forces which grow with distance. And the dimension of the moduli space is therefore reduced from 6n, which it would be if you just had n independent brains moving around the six-dimensional transverse space, to this much smaller number, 6 plus 2 times n minus 1. Okay, so there is a kind of intriguing alternative description that we don't quite know what to make of, which is that if we start in the field theory side and just in an ad hoc way consider adding an auxiliary field lambda, which couples to the operators O1 and O2 that are involved in the double trace coupling in this way. If we integrate out lambda here, we get back the original double trace deformation. But now, the point being that this action is written in terms of only single trace operators and this additional auxiliary field lambda. So, on the gravity side, maybe we could even make this description more physical by perhaps looking for an identification of this lambda with some gravity side field. Usually the couplings in the field theory are frozen out modes of the gravitons and other closed string modes from the asymptotic region of the full D-brane geometry. And perhaps there's some such interpretation for this auxiliary field lambda. And perhaps we could think about that by considering the cutoff ADS geometry and describe the physics in terms of this enlarged set of fields. The thing that is a little bit confusing about that is the fact that, as I've emphasized, this deformation affects physics really in the full bulk of ADS. So any description which involves boundary fields might not make that as manifest. Okay, so what I've told you so far is, of course, this very modest perturbative description. And it's interesting to speculate that there might be a nicer description that goes beyond this kind of perturbative description. So let me just remind you some very elementary things about ordinary moduli, ordinary deformations in string theory. Those we usually describe by a single vertex operator deformation of the world sheet action. And in perturbation theory, you can do the same thing I did here and just bring down powers of this deformation into correlation function. But more generally, you can simply do the new Polyakov path integral with this deformed action. And more generally still, you can write down the general conditions on the couplings that appear in the world sheet action so that deformations dx dx can arise with coefficients g mu nu satisfying Einstein's equation. Now, in our case, the generalization of this seems to be to consider not the sum of connected diagrams, but all disconnected diagrams with a Polyakov path integral involving this world sheet action that has, in general, bilocal and higher multilocal contributions, which can sit on, which can join different a priori disconnected components of the world sheet. So we're led to write down a deformation of the world sheet action involving some general bilocal and higher local contributions with coefficients k depending on the values of the fields on the different components of the world sheet, which are analogous to the metric in the ordinary case. And so far we just left this as a question. What does conformal invariance, Weyl invariance, under rescalings of the world sheet metric here, say about constraints on this function k? So what is the generalization of the Ricci flatness condition in the ordinary local case? So this is a very interesting question that I don't really have much to say on. So let me just turn to conclude and mention a few future directions. So of course, this is all very new, and it would be important to flesh this out much more explicitly. And we hope to find examples of this in ADS3, where there aren't any Ramon fields involved, so that we might be able to do really explicit calculations. In particular, I'm very curious to see how the non-localities that we've seen affect loop contributions, for example, to the vacuum energy on the gravity side of non-supersymmetric versions, which would have contributions like the ordinary genus 1 diagram plus these contributions with bulk boundary propagators going out to the boundary and so on. And finally, as I was just saying, it'd really be nice to understand how general this effect is. In the field theories in which it arises, it's of course more generic to turn on these double trace deformations than to keep them turned off. And to me, that's a good motivation for pursuing it further. But it is very interesting to ask whether it's just an ADS thing or whether it might be a hint of a much more general class of string theories that might arise outside of the ADS CFT context. In that regard, I might mention that in the context of old matrix models, people studied multi-trace perturbations of the matrix theory. But there, they typically found the effects were irrelevant in the appropriate continuum limit, except for specially tuned values discretely different from the original theory. And it doesn't seem directly relevant to this case, but it might be interesting to further pursue any connections that might exist between these two. So let me stop there.
Okay, other questions?
How these non-local terms affect issues like the operator product expansion, channel duality, modular invariance?
Those are all interesting questions. And one thing that seems to clearly happen is if you start with a bilocal term, you'll generate higher multilocal terms by, if you like, RG flow, or just by thinking about operators colliding. But that's a very interesting question.
So this is not something that you've been able to investigate yet. You haven't actually sort of constructed the world sheet theory in any detail.
Not out of perturbation theory.
Yeah. Is it?
But
any other questions? Go on.
Yes.
So if you integrate those two vertex operators, you integrate over this point at the boundary.
Right.
What kind of function? You get some function of the geodesic distance between the two worldsheets, right?
Right. It's this convolution of bulk boundary propagators.
So
that's some function of x1 and x2. But we've just written it as this integral.
Other questions? Okay. If not, then let's thank Eva again, and we'll have lunch.